business is a numbers game. Building the business traditionally is different from building a tech product.
What person must you become to be able to lead a startup?
Number one business and self-development podcast, Connected Minds Podcast.
My man, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Look, I see you're wearing white, and I'm also wearing white. Yeah. White is my favorite color.
Well, I live for white.
Hey, that makes the two of us.
Yes.
I've seen several interviews of you, right? And I've watched the trajectory of businesses that you've started in Ghana.
Mm.
And one of the things that really strikes me is how you can move from an industry to an industry.
Mm.
Because most people would like to be comfortable in the space where they're in.
That's true.
How are you able to start this business? I mean, you started, there was a company you started, you sold it to Trips, right?
That's
and
true.
And then you got employed by them again. So how are you able to do that?
So I think most people, first of all, like to think that to be successful in business, you need to have a domain expertise in that sector. So someone should start a restaurant only if they're a chef, or someone should start a fashion business if they've gone to a fashion school. I am of a completely different opinion. I actually think that outside people, so if you do not have sector-specific experience in that domain, you can bring new perspectives or new thinking, and that can bring about innovations and new ways of doing things. Because the people who have domain expertise think conventionally. They will say that, oh, this is how it's always been done in this sector. Oh, this is how it's always been done, you know, for the past 50 years. So what are you going to change? You know, but if you are from the outside, you think differently. You think like a customer. You think like a user. You think like an innovator, and you disrupt the system. I mean, today, Facebook or Meta is the biggest media platform, but it wasn't built by a media professional.
Mm.
You understand? X is a media platform, but it wasn't built by a media professional, or media and communication platform, but it wasn't built by a PR and communication professional. So as an entrepreneur, I just like to think about how can we do things differently, regardless of whether I have a domain expertise in that business or not.
You know, most people get scared, right, when they're moving into new industries.
Mm.
As an entrepreneur, especially when it's a startup, you usually want to be comfortable in the space where you are.
Mm. Mm.
But then for you, what does it take to say that today I'm going to do a business in transport and I'm going to disrupt it?
Mm.
Tomorrow I'm going into healthcare. The next day I'm going into construction.
Mm.
What does it take?
For me personally, and I think it varies for different people, I have to experience the problem or the opportunity. I have to experience it. I have to feel it. I have to connect with it and then personalize it. And then I own it. That's how it starts. So let's go back to my first venture, which was a fintech, a financial technology company called Westcape. I was working at Imani at the time. Imani is a policy think tank,
yep.
You know, based in Ghana. I got into money to launch their Francophone project. Then I became communications director. I also did a lot of work on governance and economic research, you know. But I wanted to leave the money to do something different because I thought that I had outlined the system, you know. And I wanted to start a business. So I was looking for loans. I had saved up to, it's close to about 200,000 Ghana cedis. All right, so, but I wanted to start would require about 500,000 Ghana cedis to launch it. So I needed loan to top up the savings I had. And I was, then that was the first time I came into contact with the financial services industry firsthand.
Right.
You know, because the only thing I was doing was either saving, investing, either through intermediaries or through my relationship managers. At the time, you didn't have apps like this, you know. So I wanted to borrow money and I went to the banks. They said, you got to have this, you got to have that, you got to have that. It was a shock for me. I didn't know that that's what many people, you know, were going through. And I would tell them that I saw this interest rate on your website. It says 21%, but now you're telling me 29%. You know, why is that the case?
Yeah.
I don't understand. You said that I only need this like 5 items on your website, but now you're telling me about 10 things I need. So it didn't make sense to me, and I got frustrated. So that was the birth of my first company called Westcape.
Wow.
And what we sought to do was pretty simple. digitize financial products like insurance, loans, and investments so that you don't have to go through multiple steps to have access to this product. So let's take insurance, for example. If you wanted to buy an auto insurance or car insurance, you would have to, you know, be harassed by an insurance agent.
Yep. Yep.
And they tell you that their premium is the best, their claim process is the best, all of that. And then they bring you some forms to fill out with tiny text, you know, and you need to have a lawyer to understand what the text means, all of that. And so with our platform, that was completely different. So what you would see what the insurance cover is about, so auto insurance from Enterprise, for example, this is the premium, this is the claim process, this is the description, these are the, everything. You see it. And then you'd even see reviews from previous users.
Okay.
You know, which then gives you the confidence to go ahead with that service provider or not. And if you are interested in the auto insurance from Enterprise, then you go ahead and request it on the website. Once you request it, you input your details, your car number, everything. The request goes to the Enterprise insurance dashboard. Then they act on it and they deliver your sticker to you, or they ask you to come to the office, pick your sticker. It was as simple as that. So I wouldn't have thought about it this way had I not felt, you know, the pain. If I was from the inside, I would not be thinking of the solution that way.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Then we moved to. So what happened is that we raised $100,000 in equity investment from it locally, because the problem we're solving was, I think, very good. And so one investor saw the opportunity and decided to invest. And that's when, you know, building a product, I actually saw the challenges with building product, like tech product, because building the business traditionally is different from building a tech product. With a traditional business, you're just concerned about providing a service to the user, right? You know, so the user needs insurance. You provide that insurance, it ends there, and then they pay you for that. For a tech product, you got to think about a problem, and you got to understand the user's problem. You know, how do they use the insurance? You know, how would they access it? Because you're not going to sell it to them physically or in person.
Right.
They have to. You're going to give them the tech, and then they have to then buy the service using the tech.
Mm.
All right. And so you got to think about the user, understand the user's journey very well. How do they discover that tech product? Where do they discover it? Do they prefer to buy it on a mobile app store, or a USSD short code, or they want to call and buy that insurance product? You got to do this, and it's not easy. And sometimes most entrepreneurs tend to think that they know better than the user, so they start to build, you know, from their bedroom. And that's what we did.
Okay.
You know, we spent about $50,000 building a solid platform. We're super excited about it. And, you know,
without any feasibility studies.
Without talking to the user, you know. And that's what been the first time found that teaches you. And so we went to the market. We saw that the product was over sophisticated for the user. We had too many features that the user didn't need. And so it wasn't solving the problem for the user. Yeah. And we had to go back to the drawing board. Well, thankfully, we managed to recover from that mistake. It wasn't fatal. Sometimes it can be fatal, but it wasn't fatal. And so we pivoted and we did the right thing by talking to the users. We started calling users to come to our office, would create a round circle, you know, and I would sit in the middle and be asking them questions. So what was the last time you bought an insurance product? When was the last time you borrowed the money? You know, and they were giving us ideas, and I would be noting the things down. So that's how we built the finished product and built it better. And that's how we managed to sell that software asset at some point when the banking sector faced some crisis between 2017, 2018, and 2019. You know, what happened was that many financial institutions were undercapitalized.
Okay.
And what that means is that they didn't have the required reserve to operate their business. So at every given point in time, the Bank of Ghana, which is the regulator, requires financial institutions to have a certain amount of money sitting somewhere, you know, so that when we all go to this financial institution or to this bank to withdraw money, they will be able to honor that request.
And many of them could not.
Could not, because they had divested the funds. You know, they were investing in real estate, which were, you know, long-term assets. And if a market woman is saving at a bank, they don't expect to keep the money for the next 10 years, you know, even 5 years. They expect to come for it in a month's time.
Yes.
But the microfinance savings and loans and banks were investing the money in real estate, in new ventures like resort and things like that. And these things take time to generate returns. So we had the bank run, and our business was exposed to the industry. And so some of the contracts we had got canceled. Some of the leases we're pursuing that were going to give us, you know, millions in revenue were canceled. I was already dreaming of becoming a millionaire when I saw the revenue and everything.
You've already started spending the money before you even get it.
In my head, you know?
Yeah. It happens. You know, I wanted us to touch on for the average person. How can they generate a startup idea in this economy?
So I think it's pretty, I shouldn't say it's simple because then it might be simple to me, but it may not be simple for other folks. But I think the less frictionless way to go about it is to look at your environment first. Start with your environment. If you live in the village, for example, and everybody's thinking about, is complaining about the water. The water bodies are polluted. Everybody's thinking that, oh, the water body is polluted. That's everybody's nightmare or concern. As an individual within the community, what can you do to address that concern? You can do many things. You can consider, for example, importing a chemical you put in the water body to purify the water body so that when people fetch the water, you know, it's not contaminated. And you charge the government or you charge whoever it is to pay you a fee for purifying the water body. This could be an idea, all right? You could decide that you would extract the water from the river, treat it, and supply it to people's homes. So people don't come to the water bodies themselves directly, but you're extracting the water from the water body, and then you're treating it and distributing it. And you're still addressing the concern because their concern is that they don't have access to quality water and the water bodies are contaminated, you know. Or you can say that there's a water treatment plant in Accra. I'm going to do a joint venture with them. I'm going to ask them to come to this community, set up a plant. They bring their machinery. I'm going to have 10% of the business. They're going to have 90%. They will do it and they will do everything. I will simply be coordinating the success of the business on the ground in that community. And you're addressing the issue. So that's one way to think about generating startup idea. Start with the environment and think about the ways you can address that problem for the user, you know. But not every startup idea can be a business as well. And that's another thing to think about. Because it's a good thing to have an idea. It's another thing to have a business. A business must make money at the end of the day. And so if you're not able to make money profitably, then you don't have a business. So not every startup idea is worth pursuing. And most of the time, there's no way of knowing at the beginning. No amount of feasibility studies or projections can tell you what the market is going to teach you at the end of the day. If you look at Airbnb, for example, everybody said that it was a stupid idea. I'm sure many of our audience know what Airbnb is, you know. I mean, people thought that it was, in fact, some of the greatest investors in the world at the time turned down the Airbnb investors because nobody thought that it made sense for one to give out their private, you know, room for another person and that business would be able to make money, you know, at scale. All right? So, because then that was a good idea, but you didn't think that it would be a good business. You know, so the only way to know is to do it, right? To know if a good idea is going to be a good business, it's just to do it.
Okay. I was in the car in a conversation with one of my friends, Daniel. And then the question I asked was, at what point do you know when you've started a business, right? Or when you start the idea, at what point then do you know whether I am in it? Is it going to work? Or should I leave it and move on?
I think it's a feeling. It happens like a feeling, but it should not be that way. Business is a numbers game. If you're spending say $5 to make $3. So let's say today, for example, your customer pays you $5 for the service you're offering. And for you to be able to make that $5 from the customer, you spend $4. And out of that, you have $1 left. You have to pay rent, other things, pay salaries, all of that, and so on. So your objective as a business person, as an entrepreneur, is to reduce the cost at which you're producing the service to the customer.
Yes.
So from $4 to maybe $3, $2, and so on. And so if by tomorrow you try again and you're unable to reduce the cost of producing the service from $4 to $3, then you know that there's an issue with your business. Or if you attempt to reduce, you know, the cost of production from $4 to $3, and the customer stops buying from you because they say that there's a reduced value from what they're getting, you know that there's a problem with the business. So that's one way to look at it. Your unit economics. Right. Do the unit economics add up? Do they make sense at scale? Would you have it after producing the service or the product and the customer paying you for it, would you have enough left to pay for your office, for payroll, for other things, and so on? And then to even declare profits. If you don't see it happening, then you know that it's not going to cut it. But one must be patient. You know, there are different types of business. There's what we call the margin business model, and then there's the volume business model. A margin business model is when you simply need a few people to buy the service,
yes,
and pay a lot more for it,
yep,
and that's it. And then volume is when you need a lot of people to buy the service at a cheap price. So if you're running a volume business, you need to know. It means you have to give yourself time, you know, to acquire a lot more customers in order to make up for the cost of production.
I understand that, you know, it's very difficult to, in most cases, right, if you don't have any experience in starting a business, which most people don't.
That's true.
I mean, I just started out of school.
Mm.
The only experience I had was what I used to do in college, here and there.
Mm.
It's really hard to identify what could potentially work.
Mm.
Because, you know, for someone like yourself who's got several industries where you've got, you know, businesses, sometimes it can be very difficult to understand if this will work or not.
Mm.
Now, to you as an entrepreneur, what would you say to that person running that business?
I think that you got to be visionary about the future and not content yourself so much about the present. You know, there are many businesses we thought would not work, but worked. I mean, Samsung, for example, was a shoemaking business. Mm. You never said they were just doing shoemaking. They weren't doing electronics, but they were concerned about the future. You understand? And then, you know, build for the future. If you look at Adidas today, Adidas was just doing, it was repairing people's shoes. And as they think about the future, you know.
Yeah. They have the future in mind.
Yeah.
You as an individual,
you've
built a business, you've sold a business, you've acquired a business recently.
Yes,
I think one of the companies you just acquired was Waffle.
Yeah, Waffle. Yeah, that's true.
Now, do you think people should, because a lot of the companies these days, they're looking for acquisitions. Do you think we should build businesses with the hope to sell or with the hope to leave to posterity?
Mm. I think that we should build, build business for the long term. Okay. Regardless of whether the founder wants to sell it or not, but the business itself should be able to stand on the foundation that guarantees its long-term sustainability. Because if you look at the many of the things that we're using today, they are built and manufactured by businesses that are not just recently founded. These are businesses that exist or have existed for a very long time. And if look at everything around you, these things are not manufactured by new businesses. And so if we seek to create value for the future, which is what the business should be, creating value for the future, we need to think about the long-term sustainability of the business. Now, every founder, every entrepreneur must have an exit strategy for their business.
Yep.
You know, and so if your goal is to at some point exit your business, you shouldn't exit the business with the business exiting itself as well. you know. So I think that has been the challenge for our industry.
Somebody will say that, right, this guy has been lucky for too long.
Yeah, you know.
He starts it, it works out,
yeah.
Sells it,
comes
back again, do a quick runner, come back again. And then each time he's got a business that he talks about.
Yeah.
You know, many startups that I have seen around here, the biggest problem is funding. How are you able to navigate that in your businesses?
So funding, first of all, is a relationship business. No, you cannot secure funding if you don't have the relationship. That's the first thing. So it's not a financial transaction. You know, securing the funding for your business is not a financial transaction. It's not. It's a relationship thing. So that's the first thing. I didn't know that. Our first business, our first venture, we got the funding because I used to design websites. I used to design websites and I was very good at it. I designed a website for this lady, Yvonne O'Hee McCarthy. She's a customer service professional. She was just from the UK as well. And she wanted to do something in the customer service industry. And she was always frustrated with the quality of service she was getting everywhere. She said she had gone to fill out the form on the website to have her website designed. She didn't get the feedback, or she got the feedback after 72 hours, and she was really frustrated. Look, in the UK, I'll get an instant feedback, you know? So when she reached out to me, I don't even know how we actually met, but she was so happy and elated with the quality of interaction we had. You know, she would say something, the next minute I'm providing feedback on that. She said, I need it. I said, don't worry, we'll do the research and I'll send you. Then we'll do the research, give her three options she has to choose from. So, oh, wow, you're even giving me options. Are you doing the research for me? She was so happy with the experience. So I built her first website. She was super happy. And so one day she went to conduct a training for a shipping business in Tema called Ben Marine Services in Tema. And so this Ben Marine Services gentleman or guy wanted to actually upgrade his brand. You know, he wanted to make his digital brand, everything solid. And so she recommended us. She recommended me to the man. So he's not even a guy, he's a man. You know. And she said all the nice things about me to this man. All the nice things. And then the man said, yeah, hey, Isidro, someone just talked to me about you. I want to see you. See, you know, that we went, at the time I had a partner, and so he has background in finance. So we went to his office. I even like you more in person. You know, I like the energy, you know, all of that. And so because I said, we can do this, we can do that, we can do that. He was so happy. Yeah, I think you should also come and work here. I can give you an office here. You work here. Wow. You can do your stuff outside, but work here, you know, because you're so happy, excited to want to do something with us. And then we just told him about the idea of starting the marketplace for financial services. Then he said he would invest.
The power of recommendation.
Yeah, so that's the relationship business I'm talking about. So it's not a financial transaction. It's because I wasn't expecting him to even invest. I didn't go there for investment. Nah. I was going there to design website and upgrade people's flyers. All right, so that's how he started.
We hear the success stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've done fantastic with all the businesses that you've done, but you know there are blood stains behind you. You've gone through it. You know,
sometimes you can even feel to the extent that you don't have money to put fuel in your car. You know,
I mean, you just mentioned that you have to sell a car.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's entrepreneurs go through it a lot. And I always say that if you're crazy enough to think of, I want to start a business, then you need to be prepared for all the things that are going to come your way.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you will sell your car. Mm. You might even sell your house.
Your house. Yeah, that's true.
You have your family depending on you for money and your staff members and their families.
Yeah, that's what I love about entrepreneurship. When you succeed, you are empowering not just yourself, but an entire economy, right? That you don't even see, you don't even know. Because this is it. If I succeed today, I pay better salary, or I pay salary. Let's just say I pay salary. Yeah. This colleague is going to use the salary. He's going to give part of it to his wife. He's going to use some to pay his children's school fees. Yep. He's going to buy something at the roadside from the roadside seller. And the roadside seller is going to use that to pay her children's school fees. He's going to use that to buy some things. You can understand how the rippling effect of that success, it goes a long way that we don't see, which is why I'm a big believer in entrepreneurship, except that I have challenges with the way we're doing it here. Especially the way, I mean, government-supported entrepreneurship programs have not been successful, and that is that's a big challenge with the ecosystem. We need to incentivize people to get into entrepreneurship not by giving them like 20,000 Ghana cedis after taking them through a 12-month program to launch something. No, that's not how to incentivize quality talent into entrepreneurship. Because someone with the right talent will not subject themselves to 6 months, 12 months of so-called training and then wait for 20,000 Ghana cedis or 50,000 Ghana cedis, 100,000 Ghana cedis from you to just launch a business. Quality people will not subject themselves to that process, for sure. What we need to do is to allow people to be bold and crazy. So, for example, I was just saying it this morning. I was talking to someone. I registered like 5 companies in the US without stepping foot for each steps of the process in the US. Right?
I know where you're going with that.
Yeah. I registered a bank account just last week or this week. It happened in 2 days. I didn't have to go and sit in some banking hall, bring this, take a picture. I didn't have to do that. And the way it works in our system is the reverse. And that is a big frustration to people who have something to offer. Right. So, or look at how the currency is dancing.
Don't even know what dance it is. I can't figure it out.
You know,
whether it's at Dua or at Maja, don't know.
So these things can frustrate quality people with a quality talent to first come back home wherever they are, or to stay within the system and build for the system. All right. Or the cost of finance. So one of the things that I think it should be easy for government to do is to actually guarantee risk for banks. You see, ask banks to give, and this is something that's working in the other part of the world. Ask banks to give to reserve a portion of their loan book to entrepreneurs, startups. So entrepreneurs doing this in this industry.
Yeah.
And if they don't, without any collateral, if the loans don't perform, we will pay back.
Right.
Government will pay back.
Right.
Okay? If the loans don't perform, we would pay back. And that's why business loans are so easy to assess in some markets and with competitive interest rates. And here, you don't have anything. And so you realize that the folks who have access to all the business loans are people who are doing things that are not so transformational for the future.
Mm.
We're just financing real estate.
Right.
We're not thinking about AI. Right. Just look at how much was invested in OpenAI before it started commercializing. More than $1 billion.
Mm.
More than $1 billion. I mean, can you go to a bank and say, I need $10,000 today to start an AI company, and they'll give you? No, of course they will not. All right. So we need to think about our regulatory environment. We need to think about our financial system, the way it supports entrepreneurship, and the way it supports people who want to invest in entrepreneurs. We need to create a better tax system or tax regime for both investors and entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Many investors I know are not so confident about the regulatory framework of African government. So they'll prefer that, you know, startups they're invested in are registered outside.
Yeah. Right.
And so that's why, and so these things are hurdles that, you know, deter quality people from going into, you know, entrepreneurship.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Isidore, what person must you become to be able to lead a startup?
Well, I think that you got to be a listener. You have to be observant a lot. you know, because leadership is a people's business. Yeah, it's just a people business. And so you can only do that effectively if you know how to listen to people. So listening is not just about what they say, but really paying attention to them.
Right.
No. Because I know many a times what I have had to do or say, that changed the way someone is feeling. All right. And if I wasn't listening or paying attention, I would have missed that.
Mm.
And that would have affected their productivity. That would have affected the outcome of the business. So that's one. You have to be a good listener. You also have to be willing to learn.
Mm.
That is important.
Mm.
Many a times, some leaders tend to think that they have to be the most dominant voice in the room. But you already have authority by virtue of the fact that you're the leader.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do any other thing for you to exert that authority. All right. So talking and having the most dominant voice is not an expression of leadership.
Mm.
You know. So you got to allow other people to have a position and to think and to execute.
Yeah.
You know, to fail as well. That's how you discover new opportunities. That's how you empower your team. That's how you build the foundation of the business, because the foundation of the business is the people. So if the people have the confidence to execute, do things and all of that, you know, you'll be good. You can scale it very easily because you won't have to be in every department for things to move forward. So that is important. The other thing I've seen that works really in leadership or in, you know, leading, especially startups, is doing the things that you expect other people to do.
Mm.
So I can take the customer service call, for example. I mean, I can take the customer's line. Even this morning, we did some campaign and we got some leads. And I told the gentleman in charge of that project, look, don't call. I'll be calling. I'll make the first calls.
Yeah.
I just want to make the first. So do the things that he said, oh, wow. Remember, we got someone recently and we're going on some sales visits. You know, and she told me that, oh, what we need is that, I mean, what you need is that you need about 5 people, give them the cars. You don't have to come on the sales visits, just sit in the office and, you know, that's what you need.
Yeah.
That's what she was saying.
Already racking up the bills.
Yeah. That's what, not even that. You need to do what you expect others to do so that you learn, you experience what they go through, and then you can empathize with them as well, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, so these are some of the things I see work in leadership. But most importantly, you got to just learn. You got to learn and be flexible to adjust, you know, yeah.
We're getting into the questions that we like to ask.
Okay.
When we get into the end of the conversation. Now, if you haven't subscribed, please do become part of the family and stay connected. Our question is from the previous guest, which is, what are your limitations and weaknesses?
Oh, limitations and weaknesses. I know for sure that I have the mind to see opportunities everywhere. And that can become a weakness in the sense that it turns from an opportunity into a distraction.
Okay.
All right. So it's not every opportunity that you should go after. It's not everything that you should want to pursue. And so I think that is one weakness that I am working on. I think I've managed to do better. It's something I'm aware of. There are many things that I've noted down. I said I'm not touching, but I just noted them down. Okay. That's one. Limitation. I think so big sometime that I know that I have to start small somewhere, but I just dread starting small, okay? Because I have always believed that if someone could achieve building this at this scale, not me?
You can do it.
I can do it. But the truth is that they started from somewhere, and they didn't just start by doing it big. And so...
Yeah, I was saying that, you know, human beings, we like to learn from finished products.
And
sometimes it can be very detrimental.
Most times.
It is better to learn from someone within your circle who is doing better than you.
Yeah, that's true.
Than to take that huge target.
Yeah.
It can be very...
You know, even that huge target didn't just become that target all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It went through many... It went from the infancy stage and then to the puberty stage, an adolescent, an adult, and a grandfather. You see, I seen a grandpapa somewhere. You want to be a grandpapa. No, you got to start.
You need to take the first step.
Yeah.
Now, then our next question is motivation or discipline?
I think for me, motivation. For me, motivation. I think it's also a chicken and egg problem, you know. But most of the times, I just know that once I have the motivation to do anything, I can get it done because I'm motivated to do it, right? Okay. You can have the discipline, but I'm not sure if... yeah, but for me, once I know that my motivation is to do this, I just do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. What's the best advice you've ever received?
Don't do it. Yeah, don't do entrepreneurship.
That's the best advice.
Yeah.
Wow. The best advice you've ever received.
That's the best because, I mean, you're an entrepreneur and there are many entrepreneurs out there. I wouldn't advise anyone to be an entrepreneur unless you're ready to do that.
Okay, right. Gotcha.
Yeah, unless you're ready to do that.
Crazy enough, right? Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Now, what's your favorite personal development book?
So I'm not a huge fan of personal development books. I rather have learned so much from books on specific topics, right? And one of the things I've loved is the Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. When I started working in policy think tank, it was one of the first books that I started hearing, you know, in the Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. It talked about how some nations... you know, develop to become so wealthy and others remain poor for a very long time. And when you look at our lives as well, others, you know, grow to become wealthy, others remain poor for a very long time or forever, you know. And so I've learned a lot from that book on how to really, it's a mindset thing, it's a systemic thing to get to where you are. I mean, wealth is not the goal, but it's a natural byproduct of development.
Wow.
You know, and so... once you're developing yourself, you become wealthy without thinking about it. You understand? You become wealthy in health, wealthy intellectually, wealthy materially, you know, wealthy with your connections. So, yeah. And so that's, for me, one of the best books. I've also loved some podcasts. I mean, I enjoy listening to the Diary of a CEO.
Yeah.
I love some of the content and guests that Stephen brings on the show. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's amazing. We need a question for the next guest from you.
If you, I mean, that's interesting. Well, yeah. So if you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently? I mean, that is a very simple question, but...
In fact, I think this question is so popular that it's writing it for me.
Yeah.
It's the tablet is writing it
for me. predicting it, yeah. Because... sometimes you look back at your journey and say, oh, okay, I wish I had done this differently.
Yeah.
I wish I had done this differently.
And I think everyone has got that, right? Yeah. Anyone you ask this question to, over the age of 15, will probably tell you something. They'll tell you something. But I think it's quite a profound question.
Yeah.
No matter how simple it may sound.
Yeah, but if I'm allowed to ask a second question... so that the guest has two questions to ask. Maybe that would be a new...
well, it would be a new thing, but I'm willing to write it down.
Okay.
Then maybe they have a choice. You see?
All right. So you have money, health, and relationship. What would you prioritize?
Wow.
Money, health, and relationship.
And health, relationship.
Wow. What would you prioritize and why?
That's a good question. No, that's a very good question. I like that. We have about 80% of our viewers on the channel who have not subscribed. Now, we still have about 9,000 subscribers, and we're very close to getting to the 10. And I'm hoping that before this conversation comes out, before you hear it, we'll be on 15K. And if we're not, then be part of the family. Connected Minds Podcast is for those that want self-development and wants to move ahead in life. Stay connected.